Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
I like the job on it, baby. Fires left side. Get a man there. Stevie catch. Touchdown!
Really, we still got action.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Inside the 10. 5-yard line. C.J. Spiller!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO. Tonight joining Murph is newly signed tight end Mickey Schuler, rookie safety Duke Williams, and from the Pittsburgh radio broadcast, Ed Bouchette. That and your phone calls tonight on The John Murphy Show.
This place is pandemonium!
Touchdown, Buffalo! Leotis McKelvin brings it all the way back!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hello, welcome. Tuesday night, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Happy to have you listening tonight. Thanks very much for tuning in. 2 hours of Bills and NFL talk, and you're welcome to join us. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Whether you're listening on our Buffalo flagship WGR radio or our Rochester flagship station, Sports Radio 950, ESPN Radio in Rochester, listening online on the mobile app, the Bills mobile app, or in any way you can, happy to have you in the audience tonight. We get a lot of calls from outside Buffalo, outside upstate New York, as a matter of fact, and happy to be the gathering place, as it were, for Bills fans from all over North America, all over the world. I'm going to read you an email a little bit later on tonight from a Bills fan who listening, tunes in, he says, almost every night from a long way away. So you heard the lineup tonight. Going to spend a lot of time talking about today's session of the OTA, organized team activity. If you want to see what went on today, I would direct you to BuffaloBills.com, where Chris Brown and I put together Bills Roundup, some of the highlights from today's organized team activity workout. You'll hear some of the quarterbacks talk, Doug Marrone talk about what went on today. That's always a place to go, including press conferences from Coach Marrone and some of the quarterbacks today. All of that available at BuffaloBills.com, but we'll talk about that today and give you some of our observations as we work our way through day two of week one of the first week of organized team activity. And some team activity on the waiver wire today for the Buffalo Bills. They have claimed a tight end off the waiver wire. Mickey Schuler, 6'4", 247-pound, former Penn State Nittany Lion. Claimed off the waiver wire. He was put on the waiver wire yesterday by the Oakland Raiders. Mickey Schuler has bounced around a little bit in his couple of years in the NFL. Came out of Penn State as a seventh-round pick of the Minnesota Vikings in 2010. Spent part of his rookie year with Minnesota and the Miami Dolphins. He caught two passes in six games he played with Miami. Two passes for 44 yards. Rejoined the Vikings in 2011 after being released by Cincinnati, who claimed him off waivers from Miami on the final cutdown in 2011. 2012, spent the final 11 weeks of the season on the Oakland Raiders practice squad and then released just yesterday by the Raiders, signed today by the Buffalo Bills. You may remember the name, his father, Mickey Schuler, another Penn State product, a very successful all-pro career as a tight end for the New York Jets. Mickey Schuler Sr. came into the league as a third-round pick of the Jets and had a 14-year career. 12 of them with the Jets did more than a share of damage against the Buffalo Bills during that time. Mickey Schuler Jr., he just goes by Mickey Schuler, but he'll be joining us on the line in about 15 or 20 minutes or so, and we'll talk with him about joining the Buffalo Bills. Scheduled to come here tomorrow to join the team for the offseason workouts. To make room, the Bills waived Kevin Norrell, the wide receiver, who was a rookie that came from was it Stony Brook, Russ? Is that what you told me?
Yes.
Stony Brook, yeah. West Coast guy who actually played at Stony Brook. So Kevin Norrell waived by the Buffalo Bills today. His roster spot taken by Mickey Schuler, the tight end. And we'll be talking with Mickey Schuler a little bit later on. Now, the Bills went through the organized team activity today with rookies and veterans on the field. A couple of interested observers watching from the sidelines. Paul Hackett. Nathaniel Hackett's father, Paul Hackett, the longtime NFL coach, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator, and former University of Pittsburgh head coach, Paul Hackett on the sidelines today watching his son Nathaniel, the Bills' current offensive coordinator. Also on the sidelines, Mike Pettine Sr., his son Mike Pettine Jr., the Bills' defensive coordinator. They saw a lot of plays, not quite the fast pace that we saw on the first day of organized team activity yesterday, but the Bills did get through their work today. First team snaps, most of them went to Kevin Cobb. Tavares Jackson got more than his share of the first team snaps. They seemed to alternate those two, and E.J. Manuel got the fewest amount of snaps of any of the three quarterbacks. I would think most likely because he has the most limited exposure to what's in the playbook right now. But all three quarterbacks did get a lot of action. Seemed to be a focus on the run game for most of the day. Yeah, a good, nice, crisp workout for the Bills the second day of their organized team activity. The competition is on, and head coach Doug Marrone, talking to media after the practice today, said all the competition, quarterback spot, all of the spots, they're all in play right now.
It starts as soon as people are acquired. You know, you start the competition. I think right now that we've done a good job because we're watching the reps of the quarterbacks, and we're trying to make it to a point where it's equal. Well, obviously, Kevin and Tavares have been here for a while, so it's not to that point yet, but we are getting a lot of reps out of EJ right now. Probably a little bit less than the other two are, but our goal is to somewhere along this line during these OTAs as he progresses to have those equal amount of reps.
Doug Marrone talking about the reps for the quarterbacks. As he said, E.J. Manuel getting the least amount of reps for all of the three quarterbacks today. And as I mentioned, Paul Hackett was here. Mike Pettine Sr. on the sideline today. They've been around for a day or two. I asked Coach Marrone if he can talk about those two, what a resource they might be, both for their sons and for the team in general as they kind of hang around the Buffalo Bills.
Well, I first think that they're, you know, obviously proud fathers. I mean, that's the first thing they are. I think that, you know, obviously with Paul have been in the profession and Nathaniel and Coach Pettine and now his son, I think that's the first thing that they are. And I actually, and I've talked to Buddy about this and Russ and people around, I like having, you know, people that have had that type of experience, people that have, you know, have had a lot of success. You know, my father-in-law will be here eventually. And I think what it does for at least me, and I think it does for Nathaniel and it does for Mike, is I think it just keeps you grounded. Meaning that, you know, in this day and age, everything is so much schematics and scheme. You know, we sometimes lose sight of, you know, the fundamentals of blocking, tackling, and the things that have been the stronghold of this game for a long time or the foundation of this game. So I think it's good and to get, you know, guys making sure that, hey, you know, managing us and they're people that are close. It's family. I mean, there's no one that wants us to do better as individuals as those people that are around us.
So the fathers of both Bills coordinators watching practice today. Stevie Johnson watching practice today, still struggling with the back injury that he had going way back to the first of the offseason conditioning workouts. Doug Marrone was asked today about Stevie Johnson's status and if his back is still a problem.
You know, he does have a problem, like you said. And again, you know, I think that I feel very comfortable that, you know, what Stevie has done in the past. So for me, it's more important for me to get him healthy and get him well, you know, than it is to try to push him to get on the field. And I've said that to a couple of players that are out here already that have, you know, a little bit of soreness, you know, hey, listen, we're here to make sure that, you know what you're doing and you're healthy. But like I said before, it's very difficult to make a team in this time frame right here. But it's easy not to make a team in this time frame.
And that's the war update on Stevie Johnson. Now back to the quarterbacks and the quarterback competition. And as I add up my math, it appeared to me that Kevin Cobb got about 22 snaps in the first three sessions of teamwork today. Tavares Jackson got approximately 22 snaps in the first three sessions of teamwork today. And for E.J. Manuel, it looked like he got about 14 snaps. So that's how they broke it down in the first three sessions, the meat of the workout today. Doug Marrone was asked today about the quarterback decision and if he has a time frame for when he wants to decide who's going to win the quarterback competition.
I think it's up to the players and at other positions too. I mean, you know, it's out there and it's basically once we see one person pull away from the other, then I think it's, you know, then you make that decision. To put a timeline or anything on it, I think is very difficult. And I think, again, it's up to the players to do that.
Kind of goes along with what Marrone told us, last week about you know, just it'll show itself when the quarterback decision is ready to be made Doug Marrone indicated that we'll all know because we, those of us who have watched practice, you'll see who has emerged as the leading candidate for the number one quarterback job. Still a long way to go before they have to make that decision. We talked about that issue last week. Got a chance, the media did, to talk with Mario Williams, Bill's defensive end, who had a pretty good year last year when it's all said and done. Mario Williams now finding his role on this Buffalo defense, seemed genuinely excited about the fact that he is playing a variety of roles on the defense, and said he's had a chance to line up standing up sometimes and line up down in a down position as a defensive end in others.
You know, if I had to guess, I'd probably be all over the place. But it comes with, you know, working out and things like that, being able to just move and know whenever you're in a different position that you kind of got to, you know, switch it up a little bit and your point of attack. So I feel comfortable, you know, just ready to go, get out there and make it happen.
Mario Williams talking about getting ready to go, feeling comfortable on the field. He also talked about what veterans like him have to pass along to the younger players on the roster. And as you might expect, with about 90 players in camp, a number of rookies and first-year players, one of Doug Marrone's themes is getting his Buffalo Bills player to, quote, play like a Bill. And Mario Williams echoed that thought. He was asked, what does it mean to play like a Bill, and how has that changed, that culture changed over the last few months here?
It's definitely changed since the new coaching staffs came in here. It's just being relentless and the mentality of going out and being disruptive and attacking, being aggressive, being accountable. Just going out here and making plays, trusting the scheme, trusting the system, and trusting your coaches to not go out there and, you know, do something you're not supposed to, because you know, like I said, the scheme they have is pretty good. And as long as we go out there and we all can say, you know, are you playing like you're supposed to? Are you playing like a Bill, which is our mentality, our motto for stay. We'll be all right.
Mario Williams talking about playing like a Bill, something that he wants to stress to some of the younger players. What about Mario Williams? We want to open up the phone lines to get your thoughts on Mario Williams as he goes into his second year with the Buffalo Bills, the big free agent acquisition of just about 15 months ago now. We're wondering what you think about Mario Williams. As you can tell, he does sound as if he is energized a bit going into his eighth year in the league and a new role to play in a brand new Buffalo defense. But what did you think of last year, his first year with the Bills? Last year, let me just give you the numbers. And we know, you know, how it played out with the slow start to the season and some less than stellar performances against some underwhelming offensive tackles in the early games. Mario Williams then went and had his wrist fixed during the bye week in October and came back almost a new player. But when it was all said and done, Mario Williams wound up with 10.5 sacks last year, 2 forced fumbles, 2 fumble recoveries. On the NFL Network this past week, they are conducting their series of the top 100 players in the league as voted on by other players. Mario Williams ranked number 72. Well, he's top 100, but number 72. What do you think about Mario Williams' performance last year and moving into the future? That's the question we want to throw out there on the table tonight. Phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And if you'd like to reach us on Twitter, if you want to follow us on Twitter, just look at John Murphy Show. Mario Williams, what letter grade would you assign him for his performance last year with the Buffalo Bills? And what do you need to see from Mario Williams in the upcoming year? We've talked about how his role has changed. He has a new role to play in this brand-new Buffalo Bills defense. You heard him talk about the different looks that he expects to provide to the Buffalo Bills defense. But what letter grade would you give Mario Williams for his first year with the Bills last year? And what do you need to see from him now this year? His second year with the Bills, his eighth in the league. The important thing, I think, is to keep the money out of it. We all know he made a king's ransom when he signed that free agent contract last year. And as I said last night on the show, that's the only way you get a premium player off the free agent market, by overpaying, by breaking the bank. Otherwise, you don't get him. Somebody else would sign him to that number or something similar. Can he ever live up to that contract? Probably not. Who could? He probably could not. And that's the history of free agency in the NFL. But certainly he had some value to the Buffalo defense, and I'm asking you to assign, you know, a letter grade. What did you think he did? Was he a B player, C player, D? You know, add your pluses and minuses. What letter grade would you assign Mario Williams for his performance last year, and what do you need to see from him in the upcoming season? If you have thoughts on that, give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, and you can always follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show and send in your comments there. Here's a tweet already from our friend Sal Alessi. Mario's season was average. He came on with 10 sacks. He needs to be more consistent. Grade C+. I'd probably go with C+. I probably would go with C+. B-, C+, somewhere in that range for Mario Williams. That would be my grade. He did come on once the wrist got fixed and once he felt more comfortable. He did come on. As far as impact games, there weren't a whole lot. Houston, obviously, the most notable, but they need more of that. Disruptive plays, obviously. But for the most part, when you look at the season as a whole, 10.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 2 fumbles recovered. C+ sounds right to me. What do you think? Mario Williams, what letter grade would you give him for his season last year? And what would you like to see in the future from the Bills' high-paid defender? 803-0550, the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Just a couple of notes around the league. It's pretty quiet around the league. Former Cowboys running back Felix Jones has signed a 1-year contract with the Philadelphia Eagles, a first-round draft pick 5 years ago out of Arkansas. Spent the first 5 of years of his career with the Dallas Cowboys. He visited with the Eagles last week and then worked out with the Patriots, but he liked the fit that he found in Philadelphia. Felix Jones, 26 years old, 7 starts last year, played in all 16 games for the Cowboys, finished with 400 yards, a 3.6 yard carry per carry average. He is now a Philadelphia Eagle. Speaking of the Eagles, Donovan McNabb says he intends to retire from the game as an Eagle this September. That's what he told a radio station in Syracuse. He said the team, the Eagles, have suggested he return to Philadelphia to make his retirement on September 19th when his former coach, Andy Reid, brings the Chiefs to town. Reid says he's happy McNabb will retire as a member of the Eagles. So Donovan McNabb, after a messy divorce with the Eagles, says he is ready to announce his retirement as a Philadelphia Eagle. And a sad note from the NFL, former running back Chuck Muncy has died of a heart attack at the age of 60. Chuck Muncy also played for the Saints and the San Diego Chargers, 3-time Pro Bowl performer, 6,700 yards, 71 rushing touchdowns in 110 career games. Chuck Muncy passes away at the age of 60. That seems very young. All right, the question is out there on the table. A few minutes to weigh in right now. Mario Williams, how would you grade his first year with the Bills? What letter grade would you assign it? 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. As always, follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Give us a letter grade for Mario's year last year, and let us know what you're looking to see from him in the upcoming year. Here is Jake in Gettysville. Jake, good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Murphy. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Hey, I heard your letter grade of C+, and I don't think it's too far from that. I would say at best he had about a B, and I'm saying that with respect to what I think he's capable of, and he came on later in the season. And I think actually his numbers would be a lot better if he didn't have Wonstead as his defensive coordinator. There wasn't anything surprising about that defense. If you watch the film, it looks like he's running straight up, or he's on each play straight up each time, trying to get around the tackle. And in that sense, I think his season could be a lot better. But at the same time, you know, there wasn't many plays where Mario Williams got the double team. So the numbers he put up were largely, as far as I could tell anyway, were largely against single teaming from the offensive line.
Yeah.
And that isn't, I think, necessarily a good sign. One, that teams thought that they could single team Mario Williams and get away with it. And two, that at least for the first part of the season, they really did.
Yeah, and I think three, and along those lines, the Bills didn't do anything on defense that forced teams to make adjustments or make moves to block
exactly
Mario or anybody else. I mean, it was pretty
exactly
vanilla.
So I would think that with the right play calling, I think he could easily have an A season, even by Mario Williams standards in the upcoming season.
All right, Jake, thanks very much. Mario Williams, we're talking about last year and the upcoming year. What letter grade would you assign Mario Williams for his performance with the Bills last year? And again, as hard as it can be, put the money aside, because he'll never live up to that money. Nobody ever lives up to that kind of free agent money. Put the money aside. Letter grade for last year. What are you looking to see from Mario Williams this year? Robert in Buffalo. Hi, Robert. You're on the air with us.
How you doing?
Okay.
I gave Mario a B. The reason why I gave him a B, because when Anderson went down, you know, that was another reason why he was double-teaming.
Mm-hmm.
But the real defensive coach at that time, he would have, with a better scheme like we got now, you know, I think he would progress a lot better. But, you know, but you got to remember, though, before he came to us, he was already hurt. So you know he was hungry. Now, being injured again and going through what we went through last season, you can tell by the way he's talking and the way he presents himself that he's really, really, really ready to get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
And I'll hang up and listen to you.
Yeah, I agree, Robert. I think you're right. And, you know, think about where this was a couple of months ago when Mike Patton was hired and the speculation about the style of defense the Bills would play. Everybody talked about a 3-4, and some of us got worried about, well, wait a minute, Mario Williams didn't like his role in the 3-4 at Houston. It's a totally different defense here. It is not a straight-up 3-4 with Mario Williams called upon to drop into coverage and do all the other things that outside linebackers do. I think they are in the process and probably in the early stages of the process of crafting a completely unique role for Mario Williams in this Buffalo Bills defense, most of which involves rushing the passer. And just based on initial observations and based on his comments today, I think he does appear to be very comfortable in what they are going to ask him to do this year. Let's take another phone call. We're talking about Mario Williams. What grade, what letter grade would you give him for his performance last year? What do you need to see from him in the future? A couple of B's so far for Mario Williams. Here is Mark in Connecticut. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Mark. You're on the air with us.
Hi. I give Mario Williams a C+, and thinking that he getting a C+ because of Wonstadt's defense was pretty basic, and it was basic, and there was no design of hiding the blitz, where they just pretty much wanted to rush off the edge, get to the quarterback. And this year, I expect him under Patine to be more exotic with the blitzes, move him around a whole lot more, and give him more opportunity to get to the quarterback than to just stand to be on a wide edge and pretty much just one straight rush to the quarterback, giving offensive line and offensive coordinators a chance to keep him out of the play and keep him quiet. So yeah. I expect a little bit more exoticness out of this year's blitz, and moving him around will help him a whole lot more to get him more around to the backfield, to the quarterback.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, the goal is to have force offensive coordinators and offensive teams define Mario before anything, before the snap. Where is he? Where is he lining up this time? And what might he do here? And, you know, he's a superior athlete. He really is. Who I think, when we're giving him C's, now you gave him a C+, I gave him a C+, a couple of callers gave him a B. I mean, we're talking about a guy who is, I think most of us feel, is not fully tapped into all of the skills that he has during his one-year tenure here in Buffalo. I think we look for much more improvement, much more impact out of Mario Williams this coming season. And a lot of that will have to do with how he's deployed. I think that's what we're all saying. I look forward to it. And when I hear him talk today about how excited he is about this defense and what the possibilities are and how he might be used, I think there could be some good things down the road for Mario Williams. A tweet from Spiller is Killer. Anything less than 15 sacks would be a disappointment to me for Mario this year. That's a lot of sacks. That's a lot of sacks, 10.5 last year. But I think we're all kind of thinking along those same lines that we're looking for, production in sacks. And even more important than sacks, I believe, are pressures. You know, you want consistent pressure from Mario Williams. They will result in some sacks, no doubt. But you want him to be a disruptive force. And sometimes that's not really measurable on the stat sheet. You know, sometimes the sack goes to somebody else. Sometimes there is no sack, but there's a quarterback forced to, double clutch, or a quarterback who is forced to throw it away, into coverage, forcing turnovers that way. 15 sacks is a lot. I'm looking at last year's stat sheet. How many players had more than 15 sacks last year? 1, 2, 3. J.J. Watt, Aldon Smith, and Von Miller. The only ones. Cameron Wake had 15. So only 3 players had more than 15 sacks last year. That's a lot to ask, but I think when we watch Mario Williams, we know that the potential is there for that sort of production, that sort of performance. We'll revisit this as the show goes along. Mario Williams, he obviously has a comfort level in this Buffalo Bills defense, but what do we need to see from him? What do Bills fans want to see from Mario Williams moving forward after his looks like a B to C grade assigned by most fans for his performance last year? Bills have a brand new tight end, Mickey Schuler. He's going to be live on the line with us when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Bills made a roster move today. The Buffalo Bills made a roster claim, and they were awarded today tight end Mickey Schuler off waivers from the Oakland Raiders. Mickey Schuler, former seventh-round pick of the Minnesota Vikings back in 2010. Mickey Schuler live on the line with us right now. Mickey, good evening. Thanks for coming on the show, and welcome to the Buffalo Bills.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
When are you coming to town? Are you in town tomorrow night, or what's the plan?
Yeah, I leave tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., and get to Buffalo by 11:45.
Are they gonna be able to get you on the field tomorrow? Maybe, probably not. I would think, right?
I don't know. I'd be getting off the plane, walking right on the field.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't put it past Coach Marrone. Hey, let's talk a little bit about where you've been. Oakland Raiders. They let you go just yesterday, right? Released yesterday by the Raiders.
Yeah. Yep.
Were you in OTAs or anything with the Raiders up until now? Have they done that out west yet?
Yeah, we were just in phase two. I believe they start up OTAs next week. So yeah, we were still in phase two out there.
Okay.
Lifting and running and working a little bit on the field with the coaches.
Did the release by the Raiders come as a surprise?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. No, I was actually flying. I flew into Pennsylvania for a wedding, and I'm getting back on the plane, flying back to Oakland from Pennsylvania on Sunday night, and I get a call and say they're releasing me on Monday. So yeah, it was a bit of a surprise.
And Mickey, last year you were practice squad, right? You didn't get on the active roster with the Raiders. Is that how it worked last year?
Yeah, I finished on practice squad last year.
Okay, and I'm trying to track where you've been. You kind of, you know, coming into the league with the Vikings, spent time there, and then the Miami Dolphins. Six games played with Miami a couple of years ago. What was that? 2000? Was that your rookie year with Miami?
Yeah, it was my rookie year. I got it was a numbers game at the Vikings, and then I got claimed by Miami, and I went down there and spent my rookie year. Played down there. I actually got injured my second year, and that's kind of when it started me bouncing around. That's what that's been.
What about that? Bless you. What about bouncing around like that around the league a little bit? It can't be the ideal way to get an NFL career started, but at least teams are still interested in you, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, every time you get another opportunity, you know, it's a blessing. It's not the easiest on the stress levels and your family, my wife, you know, it's hard on everyone. But as long as you keep getting a shot and to play this game, you know, play a kid's game and get paid to do it as a living, I'm going to keep going as long as I can.
So the 2010 season, which is now 3 years ago, that's the six games you played there for Miami. That's the only NFL action you've seen so far.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Tell me about those six games, and I don't have it in front of me. Were one of those games against the Bills in 2010? You remember?
No, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, 3 years
ago. I can't remember if one of those games. You know, I remember talking to Brian Scott and stuff. You know, at the games, but I can't remember. You know, we played the Bills when I was at the Vikings in preseason. So
right.
You know, they all kind of run together.
Yeah, I understand. And the Bills opened with Miami that year. I'm looking at the schedule now, so you might have missed them. What was that experience like? I mean, did play in those six games? You caught a couple of passes, including a 28-yard reception. There had to be a light switch going off moment for you, like, yeah, I can play in the NFL. Look what I did that 1 year with Miami anyway.
Yeah, those games that I got to play, actually the second to last game against Detroit, Anthony Pisano got hurt in maybe the first quarter. So they only dressed two tight ends, and I was the other guy, so I got to play the rest of the game. Actually, almost brought us back on a two-minute drive to win the game. But we had a penalty on a play. Actually, I caught a pass behind me, one-handed pass, and it was my best catch, and it got called back. But, yeah, that would have been a heck of a drive if we came back to win it. But, you know, that was one of my only opportunities that I got extended playing time. It was a lot of fun.
I was looking back into your past, and you had to feel pretty good about the way your NFL career started with the Vikings in 2010, seventh-round pick. First preseason game with Minnesota, and you score a touchdown. Do you remember that play?
Yeah. The joke was I scored in college. My first catch was a touchdown. In the NFL, my first preseason catch was a touchdown. And first regular season catch, I got to the 1-yard line.
Wow. You were like Roy Hobbs. You were the natural.
Yeah, I almost got the streak alive.
Yeah. What kind of a tight end are you, Mickey? I mean, people want to classify guys as blocking tight end, receiving tight end. How would you describe yourself?
I'm both. I try to be able to do, a little of each, being able to block and being able to run, read defenses, get open, catch the ball, run after the catch. So I'm not a one-dimensional. I won't classify myself as a receiver or a blocker. I'm not old school tight end. There's not that many left, because it seems like everyone just got one or the other. But that's what I try to pride myself on. Get down in the trenches and be able to block, and then get out with the receivers and be able to run and catch.
During your time in Minnesota, your paths must have crossed with current Bills quarterback Tavares Jackson, right? Did you play with Tavares there?
Yeah, my rookie year, Tavares was there.
Yeah, and what do you know about this Buffalo offense? I'm sure, it's all coming pretty quickly at you now, but what do you anticipate from this Buffalo offense and the kind of role that you might play in it?
I'm just looking to come in and compete. I'm excited because it's a whole new staff. I heard the offense, is an up-tempo offense, which I think, fits me well. I feel like the more the game goes on, the better I get when everyone else is getting tired. So I'm just excited to come in and try to contribute. When
a process happens like this, Mickey, who do you hear from the Bills staff? Do you hear from a coach? Did you talk to a coach on the phone yet? Or is it just the, personnel people that say, we'll see you here tomorrow?
Yeah, it's just personnel people. I saw a text that said congratulations from my agent, and I looked at it. I didn't know what he was talking about, and then I saw I had a bunch of missed calls. So I was out walking my dog. I just got a text and saw that, and then I called my agent, and he told me what happened. So then I got on the phone and talked to a couple personnel people, and they tried to find me out tonight, but it wasn't working. And so find me out tomorrow morning.
First thing in the morning. Hey, longtime Bills fans, of course, your name will sound familiar. Your dad, Mickey Schuler, another Penn State tight end, third round pick of the Jets, 14 years in the NFL, 12 with the New York Jets. And it seemed like your dad almost made a living off of killing the Bills with some great receptions and some great plays against the Bills. Have you talked to him at all about that?
Yeah, he said that the fans are pretty intense, and they didn't really like when they came to town. But he said they got your back, and it'll be a really fun place to play.
What did you pattern your game after your dad's at all? Do you remember much about his NFL career, Mickey?
Yeah, I know he was the tight end that could block, and he was a pretty good receiver, he raised me. To be that same type of player, and I would definitely try to emulate him. He would teach me different things, that an NFL player, would know that I was trying to do it in high school where it wasn't really working because the D-backs aren't looking you in the eyes and they're not reading you as the same as an NFL, player does. So, when I got to college and then the NFL, those things work.
Well, Mickey, you're going into what? Your fourth year in the league, right? And you're 26 years old. Do you look at this claiming by the Buffalo Bills as a chance at a fresh start? How do you approach this?
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking at it as a new start, a fresh start, and just coming in there and learning, getting back to work, work as hard as I can to be the hardest worker, and earn some respect and just try to help this team, win and get back to the playoffs.
We'll see you here tomorrow, Mickey. Have a safe trip. Thanks very much for being on the show with us tonight. We appreciate it.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mickey Schuler, tight end, claimed off waivers by the Buffalo Bills late today from the Oakland Raiders, released by the Raiders yesterday. You heard the story. He was on a flight when he got word that he'd been released, and now he is a Buffalo Bill. He'll be here tomorrow to join the team at organized team activity. All right. We've got more to come. We'll revisit the phone topic when we return. Mario Williams, his season last year. What kind of a letter grade would you assign it? Couple of B's, couple of C's so far with his 10.5 sack performance last year. And it maybe more importantly, what are you looking to see from Mario Williams next year? If you have thoughts on this, we'll get to the phones when we return. 803-0550, the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can always Chime in on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Good to hear from Mickey Schuler, the Bills' new tight end. Do you remember his dad? I remember his dad. He was a really solid tight end, a 14-year NFL career, 12 with the Jets, tore up the Bills over and over and over again, it seemed. And Mickey Schuler says he'll be on the first flight out of Minnesota here to Buffalo tomorrow. I don't think he'll be here in time for practice. OTAs tomorrow start at the same time, I believe, 10:30. But he'll be around. I'm sure he'll be around and have a lot of catching up to do. All right, we've got phone lines open for the next couple of minutes. We're talking about Mario Williams, who sounded energized today in the post-practice news conference about his role in the new Buffalo defense, which made us think, last year, what letter grade would you give Mario Williams for his performance last year, and what do you need, what do you want to see from him in the upcoming season? Let's go to Carl in Clarence. Hi, Carl. You're on the air with us. Good evening.
Hey, John. Great interview with Mickey. It's nice to have a Schuler on this side of the ball now.
Yeah. You're right.
Anyways, I'm sure his family will love it in Buffalo. But my comment on Mario is I guess I give him a C. You can't argue with the sacks. He did have a hurt wrist. I saw him as kind of immature, and I don't know if it was even his fault because I kind of thought that God love Chan, you know, I love him like a brother, but he had a tendency to be kind of an enabler, and an enabler does not a head coach make, in my opinion.
How did you see Mario Williams immature?
Yeah, well, I think Morano set him straight, and yeah. I think that's what the kid needs. He needs some structure, and that's all, just like all young kids do.
Yeah, but Carl, what made you think that Mario was immature last year?
I just a lot of the attitude with the post-game interviews and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like... you know, it's not my fault. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
I've seen more mature players. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
But I had a question for you.
Yes, sir.
You know, I think one of our biggest problems is motion penalties. And with the up-tempo new offense, I'm wondering if that's not going to be exacerbated. How do you think Marone's going to clean that up?
I don't know. I'll be honest, I have not seen a ton of motion yet in what they've done. And again, we're watching pretty rudimentary early OTA practices. I haven't seen a ton of motion, so maybe that won't be an issue. They do have officials at the OTAs, three or four, maybe. Yeah, four officials, and they're throwing their flags for motion and offsides when they see it, and false starts. Something that this is the earliest I've ever seen officials at a pro football complex. So something that obviously they're going to guard against. The officials have been here. They were here a couple weeks ago during the first round of veteran workouts. Here's Jason in Lancaster. Jason, good evening. You're on the show with us.
How you doing, John?
Okay. What's up, Jason?
Yeah, I don't think it's fair to really give Mario a single grade, you know, for his, you know, for the whole season. I would say the first, you know, five or six games, I would give him probably a C-. He was playing injured, but, you know, he really wasn't there. There was no presence, really wasn't making a lot of plays, not a lot of pressure. The last games of the season, after the bye, after October, I would definitely probably give him a B or a B-. You know, he had a lot of good games, like you said, in Houston. He had a great game against the Colts. He had three sacks in that game. You know, he batted a ball down. You know, so he was really starting to come on at the end of the year. Next year, I'd like to see him be one of the top 5 to 10 sack numbers in the league. I mean, you know, I know, you know, you don't want anybody to say about the money, but, you know, if you are a major free agent, I think it's fair to be, you know, in the top 10. So...
Where do you think he ranked in sacks last year, Mario Williams? I guess I'm putting you on the spot. He was 15th in sacks last year. So 15th. Doesn't have a whole lot to go to get up to 10. I mean, if he's healthy.
It's not really that. I mean, and like I said, I gave him a B rating, you know, for the last half of the year. So, I mean, that's still a pretty good rating. You know, five more, you know, if he had come on earlier, if maybe he wasn't injured, you know, maybe those first five or six games, he would have had five sacks, and he would be among the top 10. So,
yeah.
you know, it's not, it's, he doesn't have far to go. Absolutely not. That's why I gave him a B. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. And let me correct myself. He was 17th, not 15th, 17th in sacks last year in the NFL. All right, we're going to get back to this issue. Mario Williams, his comfort level in the Buffalo defense that he expressed today. And what do you think about his season last year? What do you need to see from him this year? We'll get back to your letter grades in the second hour. You probably saw it over the weekend, the passing of Jack Butler, one of the all-time greats in Pittsburgh Steelers history and a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, who has some connections here to Western New York and the Buffalo Bills. We'll talk with Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette when we return about Jack Butler and other things regarding the Steelers. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's coming to the house. He's doing it again. My man. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Man, you should hang out. You should go fishing again.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
I don't know what we're yelling about.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back. Hour two of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. We turn our attention to Pittsburgh, the home of the Steelers, with a couple of news items involving the Steelers coming up over the last few days. Over the weekend, the sad news came of the passing of Pro Football Hall of Famer Jack Butler, one of the all-time great Pittsburgh Steelers, who does have some Western New York connections. On the line with us, a man who has covered the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette for almost three decades now, Ed Bouchette. Ed, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Okay, John, good to be on with you.
Jack Butler first came to my attention, I got to tell you, Ed, when I would talk with Tom Donahoe during his Buffalo stint here, and he always said to me, that's one guy that belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. There, it seemed like there was a strong sentiment among Pittsburgh people over the years that Jack Butler was an oversight, that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame until last summer. Is that correct?
Oh, there's no doubt, John. You know what happened was the whole Pro Football Hall of Fame, I think, started in 63. And, you know, they put all the obvious guys in, Papa Bear and a lot of the founders of the National Football League and its early stars. And many of those guys from the 50s were overlooked because they just didn't have enough room. And then as the years went on, the more stars developed and they went in. So there were quite a few from the 50s who were overlooked, and I think Butler was one of them because – when he retired, well, he was forced to retire by a knee injury, his 52 interceptions ranked second in the league. And that's, you know, that's back when they didn't throw as much and they only played 12 games this season.
You know, Donahoe would always talk about him. I had other Pittsburgh friends who would talk about Jack Butler. But the one time that it really struck me, Ed, was September 2007 Bills-Steelers game at Heinz Field. And I believe the Steelers introduced their all-time team at halftime. And and all the great Steelers, you know, the Steel Curtain Steelers were there. And the loudest ovation of all came when Jack Butler was introduced, a hometown guy who certainly was beloved in his hometown and beloved as one of the great Pittsburgh Steelers, wasn't he?
Yeah, and, you know, he kept his name kind of in front of people through the years because he headed Blesto. You know, he ran that, not the organization, but he was ahead of it for 45 years. And, you know, so he kept his name out there and, you know, he was quoted once in a while, obviously, and people never forgot him.
You know, and you wrote a wonderful obituary about Jack Butler the other day in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Ed, and you talked about how this is a guy who didn't really play high school football, and it was only when he went to St. Bonaventure University up here in Western New York that he began to play the sport and really, I guess, learned how much he loved the sport at St. Bonaventure.
Yeah, you know, he roamed with a couple of football players, and they started talking football, and they said, you ought to come out for it. He was told he was going to get a uniform, and he went there, and the equipment guy said, what's your name? He said, Butler. He says, I don't have you here. Get out of here. So Art Rooney's brother, Art the chief, was athletic director at St. Bonaventure at the time, and he ran into him. He says, how come you're not out there on the football field like you said you were going to go? He said, they wouldn't give me a uniform. He said, you go over there tomorrow, they'll give you a uniform. And that's how it started.
And wasn't it Art Rooney's brother who was a priest, right, Father Silas?
Father Silas.
Yeah, yeah, sort of got him hooked up with the Steelers after graduation from St. Bonaventure, huh?
Yeah, he wasn't drafted. And, you know, the Steelers, Art Rooney, probably signed him as a favor, you know, to Art Rooney was also a friend of Jack's father in Pittsburgh, and actually that's how Jack wound up going to St. Bonaventure. Art told his dad, why don't you try sending him to St. Bonaventure, and that's why he went up there to begin with. So, you know, there were a lot of connections, but in the end, Jack had to prove himself, obviously, and he did. He started out as a defensive end and somehow wound up as a defensive back.
How good was he? You mentioned the interception total, second all-time in interceptions when he retired, Ed. But what kind of a player was he, and what was it about him that endeared himself so much to Pittsburgh Steelers fans?
Well, his last day, his last year was 59. He played 9 years. So I didn't see him, John, but right, from everything I heard and clips I've seen, he was a hard-hitting cornerback who was quick enough to pick off footballs, and he returned a lot of them for touchdowns. You know, the fact he was a hard-hitting guy and that he loved the game so much really endeared him to Pittsburgh fans, because back then the Steelers stunk. You know, they were no good in the 50s. I think in 9 years, Jack played for two winning teams. And the way he went out, it was a knee injury that against the Philadelphia Eagles that was so bad that people turned their heads. And then he got a staph infection. And that, actually, that staph infection is what probably led him to his death a couple days ago.
Well, I read that you wrote that. It seems amazing that a knee injury 54 years ago and the accompanying staph infection could really lead to his death 54 years after the injury. That's amazing. I've never heard anything like that, Ed.
Yeah, the staph stays with you, and he got an artificial knee in 95. Jack always walked with a limp because of that injury. And in October, he never complained about anything, but in October, one of his sons saw his ankle was turning black. He said, what's going on there? Pull up your pants leg. And his whole leg was blue. The staph infection, the staph was attacking his artificial knee, and they had to take it out in the hospital. And one of his sons told me while there, he got MRSA, that bad, it's the worst staph infection. And that's eventually what got him. I mean, he's been in the hospital since November, and finally his heart gave out.
His friends up here in Buffalo told me on more than one occasion, Ed, that if you put the playing career aside, that just his work with Blesto and in scouting and the innovations he made in pro football scouting, that might have warranted consideration for the Hall of Fame. Talk about his years as a scout and why he was so highly regarded as a scout.
Well, you know, he headed Blesto, and he wasn't the first one, but he was installed shortly after Blesto was put together. You know, the old scouting combine that started out Lions, Eagles, Steelers, talent organization. And then when the Bears joined, it became Blesto. And it's had different teams down through the years. But Jack ran that for 45 years, and he would take young, like high school coaches, and turn them into scouts. And then those scouts would be hired by teams in the NFL. And there were so many scouts in the NFL from Western Pennsylvania who started out as high school coaches and then went to work for Jack, and player personnel guys throughout the league. I think when Jack retired, they took a picture just of the active guys. I think there were 50-some people there who had worked for Jack, and it's just an amazing thing. I mean, both Tom Donahoe, Tom Modrak, up, you know, that both worked for Buffalo, worked for him. I mean, I could go down through the list. It's a long list, but that's why he was so well liked. I mean, he taught so many scouts how to scout, basically.
And you know, I found it an interesting postscript that just the other day, I guess last week, last Wednesday or Thursday, Jack Butler's son, Mike Butler, was hired by the Steelers as a coach. Sort of fitting that would occur then, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he started out, Mike did, with the Steelers in 1983 as a scout. And so he came full circle. He was with the Indianapolis Colts organization for a long time as a personnel director there. And the nice thing about it, two nice things, you know, it's never nice when a man dies, but he did get into the Hall of Fame, you know, less than a year before he died. And 2 days before he died, he saw his son Mike back in the NFL because Mike was selling pharmaceuticals. He was having a hard time getting back in the NFL. And Kevin Colbert, who was tutored by Jack Butler and is now the Steelers general manager, hired Mike Butler back. So that was kind of nice, and his dad was real happy about that.
Talking with Ed Bichette, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And I wanted to shift gears a little bit, Ed, and talk about a guy here in Buffalo who's been the assistant general manager for a couple of years, Buddy Nix, announcing that he's stepping aside yesterday. Most of the speculation and the arrows point to Doug Whaley as his successor. Hasn't been named yet. But did you come across Doug Whaley much during his years in the Steelers personnel department, his years working with Kevin Colbert and that group?
Oh, yeah, I know Doug well. You know, I started covering the Steelers in 85, and Doug came shortly, I think it was shortly after that, late 80s, I want to say. All the years are running together now, John.
Yeah,
but he
sure
worked in Seattle briefly, and I believe he was a scouting intern with the Steelers, then went out there. You know, he played at Pitt, and he's a Pittsburgh guy, you know, Pittsburgh native, and he worked there many years as their pro scout while I covered the Steelers, and I always thought he was a good young talent. And it surprised me a little bit that someone didn't give him a shot at a bigger job before the Bills did.
Is there, and maybe this goes to Doug Whaley too, is there like a Steeler way of scouting football or a Steeler school of scouting that Whaley might bring to the Buffalo Bills? Would you think?
I think it's a pretty simple thing, John. I mean, people make scouting out to be complicated sometimes, and it's really not. It's more the plan you have to have. Everybody knows the talent in the league. I mean, you go up and down, and pretty much everybody can identify who the best players are coming out of college. The idea is to draft the people that fit your team, that fit what you're doing, and not to get out side of what you do. And what I mean for that, you probably know what reach means.
Sure.
If you need a cornerback desperately on your team and you draft one, let's say in the first round, that others have maybe second or third round talent, but yet he's the best cornerback there, and you pass by a lot of other players at a lot of positions, that's eventually going to kill you.
Yeah.
Because you're passing up good players. You can't do that. And the Steelers, for a long time, have followed that philosophy. And the Steelers also have benefited from pretty much having the same kinds of philosophies, especially on defense. Those scouts know what to look for. They've run the 3-4 for 31 years. So they know, they've long known what kind of player they're looking for, let's say, an outside linebacker or a 3-4 end. And that stability really helps. So it's not just the scouts, but it's the whole organization has to have some kind of plan and what they want to do and not be, you know, bouncing back and forth between coaches and different kind of philosophies on offense and defense.
Yeah, that's, of course, what the Steelers have had and that the Buffalo Bills have not had for a long time here. Ed, before I let you go, just a couple of thoughts on the Steelers draft. Have they had their rookie minicamp, or is that coming up next week, did I read?
No, they had it right away.
Oh,
I couldn't attend because my daughter got married that weekend. That was a pretty good excuse for me not
yeah.
to attend.
Yeah.
But I don't know that a lot came out of those. I don't know that a lot comes out of those things anyway. You know, they're there for 3 days. Everything's new to them, and you know, they can't put on pads, can't hit, none of that stuff.
Right. I just want, how does Jarvis Jones, how does he figure into the Steelers scheme? How do you think they'll use him right out of the bat?
Well, he's the first one in a long time, John, that I was just talking about, you know, not changing defenses, and they know what to look for in an outside linebacker. They would always take those 4-3 undersized defensive ends in college and convert them to outside linebacker in the 3-4 in the pros. And it took a year or two for them to make the adjustment. Well, this is the first one I can remember. It probably has been a couple before, but certainly not a first rounder. Jarvis played outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense at Georgia, so he comes at least ready in that sense. With James Harrison gone, there's an opening there. They have a veteran, Jason Worrell, penciled in right now, but certainly Jarvis Jones is going to have a chance to compete with him to start.
And the other Jones I want to ask you about, Landry Jones, obviously drafted a quarterback that the Buffalo Bills were interested in. A developmental project totally, I would think, for the Steelers. But is anybody excited about having him on the roster, or is everybody totally in with Ben Roethlisberger for the long haul here?
Well, yeah, I don't think he's going to be challenging Ben for a job anytime soon. I mean, a lot of people, including myself, wondered why they even drafted him. I mean, Ben is 31. He just turned 31. Let's just say 5 years down the road that he's going to be stepping out. And, it could be longer than that. Is this kid going to be here in 5 years? And studies show that if you're drafted in the fourth round or later and you're a quarterback, boy, the odds are real long against you being any kind of success, especially a starting success in this league. And I know everybody points to Tom Brady, and there's one other, Matt Hasselbeck, but they're few and far between.
Ed, we appreciate you taking the time to be on the show with us tonight. Thanks very much.
Okay, John, thanks for having me.
Ed Bouchette covers the Steelers, and he has for close to 30 years for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Wrote a great obituary about Jack Butler, the Steelers cornerback, the Pro Football Hall of Famer, who has all those Western New York ties, and we appreciate him spending the time with us tonight to talk about that. Got more to come. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. And when we return, we're going to be back on the air and talking with Duke Williams. Will be joining us when we return. We got more to come from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are at One Bills Drive, and we are in day two of organized team activity, the OTAs. We are joined in studio by the Bills' fourth-round pick out of Nevada, safety Duke Williams. Duke, thanks very much for coming by here. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You had the three-day weekend rookie camp and then these first 2 days of OTAs. You're a veteran now, 5 days of practice under your belt. Now, how's it feel the first 5 days?
It feels good. You know, I'm getting involved with the scheme and learning the plays and, actually getting on the field, with the other rookies and, the other vets also. And, each day I'm getting better and learning the plays and, just can't wait for the season to start.
It seems like that'd be a good way to kind of break in, to have just rookies. I think there are only 33 of you on the field for the weekend before the veterans came, and there's all those numbers and all those other people.
Yeah, when the rookies got on, we just had to get, involved with the tempo and, just keep up with the tempo and actually, know how practice went, and experience it, on our own. And, when the vets came in, it was real easy for us to, just adapt to the practice and how practice goes and the way it flows. So, it was a great time, and it was great that we got to get on the field, 3 days before OTA started.
You've been playing football, obviously, for years, but how much different is it to be in an NFL practice? I mean, does it feel different to you? Is it more serious, or is it just football?
You try not to think about it. It's the next level, and, there's better competition, and, it's a job now. But you've been playing football for a long time, and, it's just a game, at the end of the day. So when you're out there with those vets and those guys who've been playing, for years and years on out, and you just try to, just keep it in your head that it's a game and you just play. You've been playing this since you was little. You still run, you still tackle, you still block, So the game doesn't change when you're out there. It's just, a different level of competition.
One of the things I noticed, I was here Sunday for one of the rookie practices, and I talked to you after the Sunday practice, was the really intense focus on technique that Coach Henderson has put in place. And I was interested to see he didn't just do it for rookies. He kept that up the last couple of days at OTAs. I mean, he is down to the fine points of defensive back technique, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He really has us on cue and whatever you do, he coaches us up, whether you're a rookie or you're a vet, he treats us all the same. And that's one great thing about it. And, technique's real heavy right now, the guys that are just getting in and learning. So, you know, we just try to take it all in stride.
Do you see a difference between the rookie group that you're with and maybe the veterans in terms of technique? Do they know certain tricks of the trade that maybe rookies don't know?
Yeah, well, of course. You know, they've been doing it for a while. And, you know, they've been playing football. And they've been around the NFL environment. You know, they have their certain techniques. And we're just, you know, you were just getting involved, and you know, we're learning from the vets, and they've been real helpful to us, and you know, whatever we need to learn, they're there and helping hand, and you know, we're just meeting with them, and they come, they want to talk us through whatever technique we have. So, you know, they've been real helpful to me and the rest of the rookies.
There's one drill I want to ask you about, a technique drill that I saw Coach Henderson doing on Sunday, and for those who may want to look at it, it's on our website, BuffaloBills.com, in the Sunday practice roundup. But it's Coach Henderson had two defensive backs standing directly opposite each other, and basically you kind of smack each other around the shoulders and the chest area. It looks like a couple of brothers fighting in the back seat of the car or something. But tell me what the goal is of that drill, and what he's trying to get across to guys. You know the drill I'm talking about?
Yeah. And, you know, that's real important, actually, for corners and any defensive backs that are playing man coverage. You know, you want to get your hands on the receiver and, you know, kind of slow down his momentum. And, you know, it helps you in coverage, playing man-to-man coverage. And, you know, if you get one of those speedy receivers, you want to put hands on them so you can stop their momentum. So that drill is real helpful. And, you know, he's been working on the practice field.
When I'm watching Henderson coach, too, he and now you're in, like, teamwork from time to time, and he keeps drilling on guys, keep your hands on him or put your hands on him. He wants you to have a hand on the guy, right? I mean, why not? You got it.
Yeah, you know, and he's been around the game for a long time. And, you know, whatever he says, you know, I try to, you know, hang on to every word because, you know, it's real helpful during practice, you know, when we actually perform those techniques. So they're real helpful to whatever, you know, covers are in, you know, especially man-to-man covers because we play a lot of man.
Dude, what's been the biggest challenge for you through these first 5 days now? The technique work and the attention to detail, or maybe the big picture, you know, learning coverages and where you're supposed to be in certain coverages?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have a real big playbook, you know, we have to learn and a lot of different packages and sub-packages and things like that, you know, just getting familiar with those and learning to play. So I think that's really the biggest thing that I'm trying to get used to, you know, just the package. And, you know, it just takes time. You know, you're not going to get everything, you know, on one day. So, you know, I think time will tell. And, you know, before I know it, I'll know the whole defense.
From what I can tell from watching on the sideline, it appears they've got you working exclusively at safety. Does it matter whether it's strong side, weak side, as far as this defense is concerned?
Oh, you know, this defense really, you know, the safeties rotate, so there's right. No really strong or weak safety. And I actually involved with a little bit of dime and nickel work also, so I'm getting familiar with, you know, the nickel plays.
That's where I was going next. In nickel and dime, do they have you as a lined up with a man responsibility, like a cornerback?
Yeah, they have me lined up man responsibility and, you know, blitzing off the edge and things like that. So, you know, I'm getting involved with a lot of nickel and dime.
You got a full plate?
Yeah. And, you know, just getting familiar with the playbook and understanding the schemes and the techniques, you know, that's where my real focus is.
We're talking with Duke Williams, the Bills' fourth-round pick out of Nevada. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. At Nevada, you played pretty exclusively the safety spot. And in fact, you were like a box safety, it appears, right?
Yeah.
A strong safety?
Yeah, you know, I was strong safety, and I was majority towards the line of scrimmage, you know, playing man-to-man coverage on the slot or, you know, playing in the box against the run. And, you know, I didn't really play any high safety, you know, but, you know, I have to get used to it. You have to adapt, you know, in a next level. You have to be able to be versatile and be available to play any position on the field. So, you know, just getting used to every position.
You know, you're playing box safety and you have a reputation as a run stuffer and a hard hitter. And then you go to the combine and what'd you run, a 4.48, which is what top four safety times in the 40-yard dash. Did that surprise people, do you think, that you were able to run that well?
Well, yeah, you know, typically, you know, box safety, they're real heavy set, and you know, they're built bigger than the free safeties, and you know, being able to, you know, be able to run as well as I did, and be able to play the run as well, I think that turned a few heads, and you know, I was just glad I was out there and I was able to, you know, present myself to every single team in the league.
Prior to the draft, I heard people kind of describe you as a tweener, you know, maybe, you know, not exactly a box safety and not exactly a coverage type safety on the back end. But in this defense, that might be exactly what they're looking for, a guy who's versatile to do a little bit of both.
Yeah, you know, I just look at myself as, you know, a safety that can, you know, do a lot, you know, play strong and free and be able to play man coverage in a nickel or dime. And is exactly what you said, you know, it's correct. This defense is built off of deep defensive backs that can cover and play man-to-man. And, you know, I think I'm going to fit well in this game.
Duke, at Nevada, you had a chance to play on the team, opposite side of the ball with Colin Kaepernick. Did you see him coming? Did you think he would have the kind of breakout half year he had last year with San Francisco?
Oh, yeah. You know, I played with him 2 years, and I watched him develop, you know, his junior and senior year. You know, I was a freshman and sophomore. But, you know, towards his senior year, you know, I saw him blossom, and, you know, he helped us win a WAC championship my sophomore year. And, you know, when he got drafted to the 49ers, I was just, you know, just waiting for his opportunity. I knew he was able to perform as well as he's done on the next level. And, you know, all it took was an opportunity, and, you know, he got the opportunity, and he took full advantage of it. And, you know, I was expecting him to do what he did, and, you know, lead this team to the Super Bowl and, you know, and all that. And, you know, I saw that in his play, and, you know, I'm just happy for him. I'm glad that he's doing well.
In your sophomore year, that looked like it was the most successful year that you had in Nevada, right? I think you finished 11th in the country that year at the end of the year, won the WAC championship, and you had the big win over Boise State. They had a 24-game win streak, right, going into the game, and you guys knocked them off. What do you remember about that game?
Well, yeah, first thing I remember about the game, it was 6 degrees.
Where was it? In Reno?
It was in Reno.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it was late November, and, you know, we had number 4 Boise State, you know, with all the accolades, with all the, you know, first team, you know, all Americans, and, you know, their slogan that year was BCS or bus. So, you know,
you guys chose bus.
Yeah, you know, preparing for a team, you know, as well as Boise State was that year. You know, we really, you know, took it as a great task, you know, and a great opportunity for us to, you know, to get a big win, a significant win in school history. So, you know, the seniors, you know, Kaepernick, you know, we had James Michael Johnson, and, you know, we had Virgil Green, Dante Moak. We had a lot of great senior leaders on that team, and Kaepernick was one of those. He was a vocal leader, and, you know, his performance really helped us, and it was just a great win. You know, I remember just, you know, after he made the field goal, it was unbelievable. You know, it was the first time 2 ranked teams has ever played in Mackey Stadium. And, you know, we got a win over top 5 schools. So, you know, that was one of my biggest memories in college.
You neglected to mention you had double-digit tackles in it. What'd you have, 10 tackles?
Yeah, I had all 8 or 9 tackles, and I had a few pass deflections. And, you know, I was kind of my coming out party, you know, that game. And, you know, it was just a memorable game. It's unforgettable.
You know, what happened, not that Nevada last year, you know, completely fell off the table, but the switch to the new conference with all the realignment, did that make a difference in the team's senior year, in your senior year last year at Nevada?
Yeah, you know, the Mountain West Conference was a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, it had similar teams that were in, you know, the WAC Conference that we're used to. But, you know, it was kind of, we played – Air Force. Yeah, I lost the Air Force that year, and it was the first time anyone's ever played against a wing T, you know, triple option team, and that kind of hit us by surprise. And it was just, you know, it was just a rough year. You know, we struggled a little bit on the defense side of the ball, you know, but you had a lot of great seniors that year also, and you know, we were able to, you know, make it to a bowl game, and unfortunately, we lost by 1 point to Arizona.
Yeah. Talk about playing against unorthodox offensive teams in practice, going against then-Coach Alt's pistol offense. That had to be kind of an eye-opener for you guys on defense at Nevada.
Oh, yeah. You know, and, you know, we play against the inventor of the pistol.
Yeah.
So it will be a lot of, you know, tweaks thrown in throughout the practice. Throughout the practices, and you know, we'll just, you know, we practice against the pistol every day, so we're able to adapt to it and, you know, figure out, you know, a few schemes defensively, you know, some of the best ways to stop it. And, you know, while Kaepernick was there, he was able to master it. So it was just, you know, we saw, the best look, you know, live and in person. So it was just, you know, it's not really, you know, a normal offense to play against. But, you know, it's been working.
Hey, Duke, you grew up in Reno. Was Nevada really where you wanted to go to school? Was it just the hometown thing? Is that why you wanted to go?
Well, yeah, you know, Nevada was my first offer. And, you know, I was thinking it was my end of my sophomore year or junior year.
Early.
And yeah, really early. And, you know, I decided to commit to my first offer, you know, and I had a few schools come in late, you know, and offer me.
USC, I think.
Yeah, USC, you know, Washington, Boise State offer. But, you know, me and my cousin, we had, you know, stayed committed to our first verbal commit. So, you know, I was just happy, you know, to play in front of my mom and my family. So it was great.
And now it's the NFL, professional football here with the Buffalo Bills. What do you have to do to have a successful OTA leading up to this training camp?
You know, just like I said earlier, just getting the playbook and understand new schemes and just get familiar with it. And I think it'll go well.
Duke, thanks. Good luck to you, man.
Thank you.
Duke Williams, Bills fourth-round draft pick out of Nevada. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Really enjoyed talking to Duke Williams tonight. The Bills' fourth-round draft pick is an interesting background. He hasn't had it easy. You heard him talk about choosing to go to Nevada, Reno, and play there in his hometown, committing very early. Sounds like he knows what he wanted to do. He's one of those guys. I mean, we talked a lot about Kiko Alonso and the versatility he might be able to provide this Buffalo defense. I think you're going to get some of that from Duke Williams. Again, if all everything works out in a perfect world. When you think about a guy who was basically a box safety in his college career at the University of Nevada, and then runs so well at the combine, what did I say, 4.48 in the 40-yard dash, runs well, shows some coverage ability, some good flexibility and ability to change direction. All of a sudden, teams look at him as, in the NFL anyway, look at him as more than just a box safety, more than just a big hitter, a guy who can come up and deliver a blow. And as he said, as you heard Duke Williams said, he's already been used in nickel and dime packages as a coverage guy. The type of versatility that it appears Mike Patton is looking for in this Buffalo defense from Duke Williams. Now, you know, again, who knows how it plays out. It'll be pretty competitive in the Bills secondary with some young corners, Justin Rogers in particular, Ron Brooks, guys who have played a little bit over the first couple of years, guys who, you know, have shown an ability to maybe be a nickel corner, but maybe not. And maybe Duke Williams, a guy like that, because of the fact that he can help in run support and because of the fact that he is not going to be embarrassed in coverage, it appears, based on his 40 time, based on what they're getting a look at here, maybe he could be an answer in nickel and dime packages. There's so much of that. Again, more evidence of what they're trying to do on the defensive side of the ball with versatility. All right, well, our thanks to Duke Williams and our thanks to Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who joined us earlier on, talking about the great Jack Butler, who had many friends here in Western New York. Some Bonaventure connections with Jack Butler, some other connections, and heard a lot about Jack Butler over the years, just as a tremendous guy, tremendous scout. I know the Bills held him in high regard from his work with Blesto, and a great player. And I told Ed this story. I'll repeat it a little bit. 2007, Bills played the Steelers week two. It was the week right after the Kevin Everett injury. Bills-Steelers at Heinz Field. And I believe it was the 75th, and I should look it up, might have been the 75th anniversary Pittsburgh Steelers all-time team being introduced on the field there at Heinz Field. And tremendous ovations for, as you might expect, Mean Joe Green and Jack Lambert and Franco Harris and Terry Bradshaw. I mean, legendary, iconic Hall of Fame players. Great round of applause. Halftime ceremony, Bills and Steelers. The largest round of applause, overwhelmingly, the deafening roar from the crowd came when Jack Butler, the hometown guy, was introduced to the crowd there at halftime. By far. I mean, it was pretty amazing, and that always stuck with me. And sad to hear the news of the guy who was so well-respected and so well-liked by his many friends who passed away this past Saturday, Jack Butler, Pro Football Hall of Famer. All right, we got a few minutes left here in the show. We were talking earlier about Mario Williams and his role in this Buffalo defense as he sounded re-energized today and eager to get started as he's moved around on the Buffalo defense. Last year, Mario, 10.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 2 fumble recoveries, voted among his peers in the NFL as the 72nd best player in the NFL on NFL Network. What would be your letter grade for Mario Williams for his performance last year? And what do you need to see next year, this coming season, from Mario Williams? I gave him a C+. Most of our listeners talking about C, B-, somewhere in that range. No real high grades, no real low grades. I think we're all looking for more from Mario Williams, more impact from Mario Williams in his second year with the Bills, his eighth year in the league. What would you think? What would you like to see from Mario Williams moving forward? 803-0550, the number, if you have that answer, if you want to chime in with your opinion. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. News tonight from the West Coast as the San Diego Chargers go through their OTAs. This is what you hate to hear in organized team activity. Melvin Ingram, defensive end, outside linebacker, San Diego's first-round pick a year ago, suffered a very serious knee injury today. According to the NFL Network, the Chargers say he's got a torn ACL. That would take him out, you would think, for the entire season. It is confirmed as a torn anterior cruciate ligament for Melvin Ingram at the OTA today. I confess, there were a moment there. I won't even say what player because it is a Bills fan nightmare, but I watched one of the Bills players run around on the field this morning and thought, you really don't want to see this guy get hurt or any of these guys in an OTA like this in May. And the Chargers right there with that injury, very serious injury for Melvin Ingram, a torn ACL, exactly what you don't want to hear in the OTAs. Hey, I talked about this earlier. Buddy Nix, of course, was on our show last night as he made the announcement that he is stepping aside. We got a great email from a listener from London, and I'm not talking London, Ontario, London, England. London, England. Paul Norris says, I'm a huge Bills fan from London, England. I've been following the team since 2002. Not the best time in our history, no question. Said, I had to email you this evening to ask you to please pass on my thanks to Buddy Nix. I know he takes some criticism in certain quarters, but for me, the situation he inherited was a mess. However, he leaves us with a nucleus of young, talented players on both sides of the ball. He might not have turned this thing around as quickly as if we'd like, but make no mistake, he's got the ship pointed in the right direction for the first time in the long time. Cheers, Buddy, and enjoy semi-retirement. Paul in London. I passed that along to Buddy Nix earlier today. I hope he's able to take a look at that from a Bills fan in London, England. Rich in Buffalo. Rich, we're almost out of time. What's up tonight?
Oh, I'd give Mario Williams a B-.
B-. Tell me why, Rich.
I'll say that I like this penetration. In the Seattle game, I can use that as a really good example. He had nice rushes. In the first quarter, he had a nice penetration between the guard and tackle. He knocked the fullback over and tackled the halfback for a three-yard loss. With that type of animosity, he's going to be good. Now, the hindrance was the linebacking core. I didn't see the linebacker support him whatsoever. He would seal the edge, but they couldn't contain it. It was just, I'd like to see this season. Then again, you're going from a 4-3 to a 3-4.
Right, yep.
Which should be interesting for the guy.
It's going to be interesting, in fact. You're right. Thanks very much. Good points about the players around Mario Williams. I mean, the whole defense obviously needs to step it up. A very good point. All right, we're on the air again tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Hope you can join us then. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight is Pete Cargis. No, Matthew Collins.
Matthew.
Sorry about that, Matthew. I was listening. I was paying attention. Our producer, the maestro, Russ Burton, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. I was paying attention. On the air tomorrow night at 7, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.